You're listening to Cat Tales.
Hi, and welcome to Cat Tales. My guest today is the hugely talented and critically acclaimed singer-songwriter Boo Hewerdine. The musician's musician, Boo is widely regarded as one of the UK's best singer-songwriters, and his cult band, The Bible, still excites passion amongst music lovers despite being disbanded in the early 90s. Boo has consistently made his mark on the music scene with his solo performances and songs that have been covered by over 50 other artists, including Eddie Reader, Katie Lang, Natalie Imbruglia, Marty Pello and Suggs. His song, Patience of Angels, was nominated for an Ivor Novello Award. He's produced records for The Cause, scored the films Fever Pitch and 24/7, and has even had one of his songs featured on Emmerdale. This is the one with Boo Hewerdine. Well, thank you for agreeing to be my guest today. So I'm really pleased to have you on the show. And how's it all been with this lockdown stuff, though? Has it been okay for you?
I've been really busy, which is nice. I'm incredibly busy all the time, which I like. I kind of don't miss playing live.
Don't you?
And it's going to be weird next year because we've got all of next year's gigs, but all of this year's gigs all crammed in together. So I'm going to have to get used to it again.
Yeah, but you do loads of gigs, don't you?
Like 200
a year or something ridiculous.
Like that. But being at home and writing all the time and producing all the time, it feels really productive and I like it. So, and I like being at home as well.
Yeah, do you know, it's funny. I've spoken to a lot of people, as you know, and you know, everybody's saying the same thing. They didn't expect to be able to actually enjoy the process of, oh, I'm at home, what do I do? Because, you know, musicians are always on the road, aren't they?
Yeah, of course I'll love it when I do it again, but I just almost on the first day I started working on lots of projects and some of them have come to fruition and it's just really nice, you know. So.
I suppose working with so many different people, you have that, I'm going to say a benefit really, of having different influences and you're thinking of a different person performing or whatever. I guess that does mean that you produce different kind of stuff each time rather than just repeating the same old formula.
Yeah, I mean, two records ago, I wanted to, with this album called Swimming in Mercury, which was all, I made it like the very first records I made when I was like a teenager, and I wanted to revisit those ways of putting records together, so that had lots of, those all band songs, and then the last record I called Before has no guitars on it at all. It was all played on found instruments, because the studio I worked with, we'd collected some old strange instruments, and again, it's my record company, because I play them stuff, and most record companies go, oh, can you do something else? And but he kind of likes it when I go a bit outside the box. So reveal are very good for me that way, you know.
But you have to be a bit outside the box, I think, these days, don't you? Because it's such, well, it's still a very competitive market, obviously, from the music business perspective. But it's how do you get heard above all the noise online now? It's the dynamics have all changed, haven't they?
It's really hard. It's really, really hard. And I feel very lucky and I never take it for granted that, you know, this Wanderlust is, I didn't think if they'd said, oh, we didn't get any plays on it at all, I would have been okay, but it's been played probably more than the last one. So it's like, I feel very, very lucky, but I hope that you just have to do your very best or do something original. That's always important. Mm-hmm. I work on so many records or help so many people and, It's even after all this time, the things that work and the things that don't work, there's never any logic to it. But it's a huge struggle. When I first made records, there weren't that many people making records. It was very hard to get a record deal and not many people made records independently. So, it's got a lot harder. So, whenever I work with people who are starting out, I say, you've got to try and think what makes you different from everybody else. It's otherwise you just end up in a big swamp.
It is, isn't it? I mean, the internet is great for some things, isn't it? But on the other hand, the accessibility of everything means that the competition is so high. It's just so difficult for creatives, isn't it?
It is. It's also difficult for people who have to play things because they get inundated. You know, they might receive when I first started making records, there were probably 50 singles released a week. Yeah. These days it's between 4,000 and 5,000. So they can't really listen through all of that.
No.
And it's hard for everybody. But it's always been hard actually. It's just hard in a different way at the moment.
Yeah.
It's it's a tough old business. It's a tough thing. You've got to be prepared to fail and prepared to for people not like what you do. You have to sort of develop quite a skin, you know.
Yeah.
Which sounds.
Just don't read the critics. That's the best idea.
Well, I remember my band's first album. There were two that amazed me. One was in the NME. They gave us a tremendous slagging and went into minute detail for why I was so rubbish and we were all so rubbish. And I would have taken that to heart, but the gig had been cancelled and the guy had just wrote it without realising the gig had been cancelled and he got fired.
Terrific. Oh, that's divine retribution.
And after then I thought, I'm never going to say any of this personally again. It's just somebody banging on somewhere. It's fine.
Yeah. And as with all art, it's just, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. It's a funny old thing, music, though, because half of it is making the music and the other half is getting it in front of people to be heard. And I sometimes wonder if some of the brilliant songs we'll never ever hear because they never got out of people's bedrooms, and did the next bit where they put themselves in front of people.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. But I suppose is it a decision you make quite early on as to whether or not you're going to perform your songs yourself or are you going to give them to somebody else to do? Is that a decision that was consciously made by yourself or did you?
No,
just
not
go
at all. I knew when I was a kid that I wanted people to do my songs. I knew that even before I could write songs. I knew that was like a sort of dream. I started out with indie deals and it was quite a long time before people started doing my songs and I love it. And that's obviously during lockdown, that's been happening a lot. And it never stops giving me incredible joy. But I was just writing with one of my songwriting heroes, is a woman called Kim Ritchie, who's in Nashville. And to write with people of that artistic caliber, I think she's wonderful. And she wrote some of the songs in Nashville and stuff, but she's not really a country singer as such. She just happens to be there, but she's just a really, really good songwriter. And she's become a very good friend. And all the people that I write with, all my friends, have all come through writing music. So that's kind of the driving force, really. Sometimes you get a bit of success, and it's also my trade, so I have to try and make sure we can pay the rent and stuff. But
well, yeah.
But it has never been part of what I do, so it's just been a lucky byproduct.
So do these songs come first, and then the people who finally sing them and perform them come second, or do you write something specifically for a performer?
Yeah, I mean, probably the most of the songs are people who come to me and ask for a song. Sometimes people will do a song, just cover it, which is nice. But most times it's somebody said, would you write me a song or can I write a song with you and stuff like that. There's a really brilliant singer I really like, I'm in Glasgow and she's a Glasgow singer and I've seen her a few times. I really like her and she asked me to write her a song and so I did. And so I'm very lucky. I don't think many people get that privilege, but it's a fantastic thing to be asked to do.
I can feel that from you. I mean, you're really passionate about it, aren't you?
But yeah.
Do you then sort of say, okay, well, this person's going to be performing it, or they need the song for a certain purpose, or whatever, and then you try and encompass part of them within it, or is it the subject matter that drives the melody and the feel?
That's a really good question. Actually, what you do is you try and get inside their mind, and it's like if you're writing together, it's like try and be as empathetic as possible. Or if you're writing for someone, one of my favourite things that ever happened, and he's become a really good friend, is Chris Drever. I don't know if you know him from Lao.
Yeah, I do.
And he did one of my songs, Harvest Gypsies, and to write for him, and I was such an admirer of his anyway, is that I just tried to imagine what would work for him, like artistically.
Yeah.
So yes, you do. You try and get inside, and I've done that for years working with Eddie Reader. It's like you have to sort of write. It's like being a screenwriter or something. You really have to understand the performer.
I can imagine that. I mean, I saw you perform Dragonflies actually on one of your live shows over the internet.
Oh,
which
right.
I absolutely adore that song. It's absolutely wonderful. But it was great to hear a different take on it, because obviously I've heard Eddie sing
Yeah.
And then to hear you, it was beautiful. I mean, the song is gorgeous anyway, but it was lovely to feel it had a different twist, because a different performance, different vocal, obviously, male, female. So do you think about that in terms of like how it can translate into different, different performances later, or is it just, let's get it right for that person?
The ultimate goal, always when I sit down to write a song, even if it's for someone, is a song that's going to just be able to fend for itself in any performance. Mm. And I remember starting that. I was outside Queen's Hall in Edinburgh. It was about this time of year. It was a nice sunny day, and I was sort of working on it. And she went, "Oh, that's good. Can you finish that?" So I did. Her version had her in mind, but actually there's someone else, a few other people have done it, and those are the ones that I get a real kick off, is that someone's just found the song by themselves and decided to have a go at it. So my favorite thing is when songs go off and have adventures all by themselves and other people do them. So yes. with that song, it's going to sound different when I do it. But I've got a thing about songs, is a song, you can do a good song, hopefully that's a good song, in any arrangement, and it'll still be that song. And it was like My Way by Frank Sinatra or My Way by Sid Vicious. It's still the same song. Yeah. And songs are magic like that. The songs aren't the arrangement, they're the songs. So
yeah, they have a life of their own, don't they? And a whole personality of their own. And there's something within them that you can recognise, even though they are performed in a different way.
Yeah, and that to me is that's the magic. And writing with Kim today, she really gets that. So she's really forensic. Like every line, we look at different alternatives, and it's just it's a kick that never goes away, you know. Mm. And all through lockdown, I've been working with loads of people. People that I wouldn't have worked if it wasn't for lockdown. A wonderful, I don't know if you know, but a wonderful, wonderful singer called Adam Holmes. And we've written his whole record together. It's being mixed as we speak. A mix arrived just before I spoke to you. And that he's wonderful. A woman called Lady Nade, who's down in Bristol. We've written the whole record together. And this wouldn't have happened if not for lockdown. So I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, it's different.
Is that bad?
No.
Not bad. Because Glasgow's back in lockdown again now, and everyone else is going, oh, and I'm going, oh, okay.
Yeah. Do you know, lots of people found a new way of living, didn't they, within lockdown, that they actually enjoyed, you know, the nature was there that you could hear and enjoy and see, and, you know, and then it suddenly, life begins again. It's like, oh, well, actually, that was, that way of being was actually quite good.
Yeah, it's a bit stressful. I know, I mean, we've been touched by it as well, so I'm not being glib about it. Really. My stepmother's had someone we know is still very, very ill and stuff. So I don't want to come across as being glib, but it's just, in all honesty, if you told me that it wasn't going to be that bad, I wouldn't have believed you at the beginning, but it's been okay. So for me personally, you know, not for everybody, obviously.
No, I mean, some people have struggled, haven't they, really?
Yes, of course. I'm very fortunate. I noticed that, like a guy on Facebook, I have a Patreon page, which I really love putting stuff on it, which is, so I put stuff on there every day. And he said, oh, I would love to hear this, but I'm on Universal Credit and I can't afford it. And that, of course, that's really hard. But I said, look, I've set it so you can, I can't let people in for free. It won't let me do it. I'd love to, but technically it won't let me do it. But I've set it so that you pay hardly anything and get in, you know.
Yeah.
I'm aware that I'm a lucky fella. So
yeah, I was going to ask you about Patreon, really, because there's lots of musicians trying to do different ways of, you know, making money out of this business that has very little opportunity these days.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask how it's doing for you, Patreon, because it's a new thing for you, isn't it?
Well, it is. I did a blog 3 years before, almost like a comedy blog, and I used to love doing that. And then it sort of, life events meant I couldn't do it for a while, and then it's the creative thing that I enjoy. Yeah, some people donate quite a bit of money, but I have it. So quite a lot of people are on there just giving me a quid or something. So I have quite a lot of people. I have more than most of my pals, but I don't have the tiers or if you pay this much, you get this. It's just, you know, it's just a place. I just want it to be like a little club, really. So it does make me a little bit of money, but that's actually not the driving force. It's the fact that I get to share something with them every day, and that's more that, you know.
Yes, exactly. And they're the people who really want to hear your material, aren't they? So you know that they're already bought into what you're delivering for them.
Well, I'm also very lucky in that because I've sort of been doing so incredibly long. I can think of new things every day, like some funny little project that happened 20 years ago, or I wrote this with this person or that. So something different every day. So it's just like a little bit of fun, hopefully. But some other musicians, younger musicians or stuff, it's like, really, it's like, oh, what am I going to do today? I never have to do that. I can just go into the archives and find something or share some little thing. So it's really, it's nice because as a person, nostalgia is not something that has ever occurred to me particularly, but during this time, I have been looking back and actually it's been quite nice because I've been reminded of some really fun things I've done, you know.
Yeah, I know. I bet you have, because you go back through the archives and you think, oh, do you know what? I'd forgotten all about that. And
oh, totally.
Kind of relive it, don't you?
And there's some really funny moments, some really beautiful moments. And yeah, because it's funny, both Eddie and I have this thing where we just keep forwards, always looking forwards, don't look back sort of thing. But it's okay, because I quite like what I've been doing.
Yeah. And let's be honest, if you don't like it, you can't expect anybody else to, can you?
Well, you don't know, do you?
No, you don't know. I mean, when you're
such a funny thing to do, isn't it? It's like it's like an entire life of showing off. And I do sometimes wonder about that. But if, say, Eddie and myself and nearly all the people I write with, none of us are show-offs. It's just what we feel we should do.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody. Everyone is that I know who's, they're all quite modest and it quite sometimes when we're about to go on stage, you'll look at each other and go, what on earth are we doing?
Is this real? Has it actually happened?
Yeah, but if you asked us to do a speech at a wedding, we'd crumble, you know. It's like very strange. It's a strange life.
Do you ever get that imposter syndrome? You know, when you're sitting there and you think, oh my God, what am I doing here? These people are looking at me.
It's all right. I've got people around me to do that for me.
People keep your feet on the ground anyway.
Yeah. What are you doing? What are you doing there? Yeah.
Oh, I really want to talk about your new single, Wanderlust.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable, I have to say. I have been listening to it.
Remarkable? Or...
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's lovely. Okay. Yes, it feels so ethereal and haunting. It's so just absorbing. You know, you just get sort of, you know, engulfed by it. And then suddenly 3 minutes is up and it's like, what? Oh, that was a quick 3 minutes. I want more.
It was made in a very unusual way, which I could tell you about.
Oh, yeah, please tell me.
So it's lockdown-y. My son is in a band called Simon and the Astronauts, and he was the singer, but they talked about getting someone else to sing some songs. And the other guy has said his favourite singer when he was growing up was a woman called Rachel Hayden, who used to sing with Weezer and Beck and people like that. Mm-hmm. And my son just emailed her, and she's now singing the whole of their album, which they just mastered this week. But then we got chatting because I wrote two of the songs on their record, and she said, oh, could I send you something? And what you hear on the recording in the piano is her playing in a room just onto her iPhone a few years ago, and you can hear people talking in the background. So we just built the whole song around her piano piece, and I wrote the song over her piano. And then I sent it after that. So I'm in Glasgow. Then I sent it to Copenhagen, where my friend Gustav Lundgren did all the beautiful arrangement stuff on it. So it's been all over the world. So it's an appropriate name for a song, I think.
Oh, it is, isn't it? It's actually done the wandering for
you,
hasn't
it? It's been in LA, it's been in Glasgow, and it's been in Copenhagen, yeah.
Oh, wow. It's quite different from what you're known for, really, in a way, isn't it? I mean, obviously the acoustics and all that is one thing, but it doesn't feel very commercial for a new single, shall I say.
Well, I played it to my record company and they said, oh, I want to put it out for a single. And I said, really? And it's been played quite a lot.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Every time I make something new, I feel it has to be a bit different because I don't want to repeat myself. And it's like, I'm very lucky that I've been doing this a long time, but I just always approach every new project like something fresh. Because if I kept doing the same thing, the handful of people who care about what I do, I want them to hear some development rather than just like more of the same. So.
here you are again. Call my name.
Hello there, this is Boo Hewding, and you are listening to Cat Tales.
Oh, it's like when you're writing all these songs then, you know, is it a little bit autobiographical when you're actually, you know, you're looking back there, all these nice things that have happened, and obviously some haven't always been nice, but do your songs for yourself, for your solo performances, end up really telling the story of your life?
Well, I purposefully tried to do that about my life when I was a kid in North London for the whole of the Swimming in Mercury album. Hmm. But they always end up being something else. It's a funny thing about songs is they have layers. And also, it's actually the other way around. I wrote an album with Duke Special called Under the Dark Cloth, which was a fantastic project to do. It was all for photographs in the Metropolitan Museum in New York. Very grand sounding, but it was so much fun. So each song was taken from a picture, and all of them were biographical in some way or another. And we finished the songs, and it's a fantastic record. Peter, he's called you. His performances are astonishing. We realised that even though we were writing about other people, somehow we'd snuck ourselves into the songs. So you're always there somehow, even if you don't want to be.
Yeah, if it wasn't intended, you'll get in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello, I'm here.
Yeah, oh, there I am. Yeah.
Somewhere in there. It's a funny thing, though, isn't it? Because a lot of the, you know, the situation with your career has been that you've been the man in the background in a way, haven't you? You are that name in the brackets as you've.
Yes, you know, I suppose so. I still think it's going to happen. You know, Kat. It's like, you know, I'm going to have my name in well, maybe not in lights, in sort of, you know, small candles at some point. No, I don't think of myself as being in the background, but I really like working with other people.
Yeah.
Basically, there's no plan. You just sort of keep going, and with a bit of an eye, that this is how you support yourself without that sneaking into the music, if that makes sense, you know. So.
Yeah.
I never allow that in, and which is probably why a lot of my friends live in huge mansions and I don't.
But one day you will do.
No, I don't think so. one day I might get on Look East or something.
I think you've already surpassed all that already, Boo, so I really wouldn't worry. I mean, you were nominated for an Ivor Novello Award. Come on.
I was. See, even that's a funny story because I was trying to find it to put on Patreon, and I might have another look, is that they changed their mind at the last minute and gave it to someone else, but on the press release that went out to the Evening Standard, I won it. So I have a paper somewhere in one of my lockups, which and it's on actually on the front page of the Evening Standard. Canada that it was Song of the Year.
Oh. And,
yeah.
That's a bit like Back to the Future, isn't it? When they keep changing. You know, they change.
Yeah, it was a bit like Back to the Future. Yeah. No, it sounds like a bit. I'm not at all, because I think it's a hilarious story, because I know like there's more to it than that once I heard that what actually happened. But it's sort of just, that's the sort of thing that happens to me.
Yeah, do you know, I get that completely, because that's the sort of thing that would happen to me, really. Yeah, you know, yeah. you're all up for winning. It was obviously going to happen. And then suddenly, what's happened? Yeah. Oh, you poor thing.
Really, it's fine. It's fine. Funny. It's a funny story.
Oh, it's lovely.
But yeah.
So what drives you then, if it's not things like awards and, you know, your name in lights? Is it just the sheer fun and the experience of the music and the joy it brings?
It's the writing, I think. And I've never done such a sort of extended amount of writing. And it's just that mindset that you get into. It's endlessly rewarding, and you're endlessly learning. You know, spending 2 hours with Kim writing today, it's just it's a real privilege, you know.
Yeah.
That sounds really po-faced, but it's kind of true. You know, when nice things happen, they get played on the radio or whatever, or people do your songs, that's really, really, really nice. And I'm very lucky, and it means I can carry on doing it. But it's actually the doing it that I love, you know. So.
Yeah, that's interesting, because some people prefer the performance, the end product, and actually interacting with the audience more so than the writing process. So it's interesting to hear the other way around.
Oh, I do like, yeah. But I mean, you know, next year you'll ask me and I'll go on about how much I enjoy gigging.
Yeah, you've forgotten how it feels, yeah, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm not very reliable in that way. Of course I love gigging, of course I do. It's just I don't miss it. I thought I was going to miss it. I've got other friends who are sort of like, it's like they've been, you know, trying to get off a drug or something, but I don't.
Oh, that's great.
Unless I'm doing something else instead, you know, it's fine.
Yes, exactly. And it's about having different depth, isn't it, to various different things. It's not all about one thing. So if you've been looking back on all this stuff, are you thinking about doing an autobiography or something like that?
People say that all the time. It's a kind of interesting question, because I have my friend Chris Difford, that, you know, I work with. He did write an autobiography, but the problem is how truthful you can be in it. So I knew some of the stories that are in the book, but they're very toned down, so people don't take umbrage. A lot of people did get upset with him. Yeah. So I think it would be interesting, because we only ever read biographies by successful people, and I think it's sort of quite interesting, people like myself who are sort of bouncing along the bottom sort of thing. It'd be kind of interesting, you know?
You're being too humble there, Boo. You really are. I think people really would like to hear your story. So, you know, you've got to think about that book.
Well, I people do ask me, and it's the format, really. Maybe you can help me, Kat. I thought about doing it with each song. A friend of mine is Nick Hornby, and he did, obviously, like Fever Pitch was written in that way. You could do each song and the story with it, and because of that, other stories all unfold. Or yeah. I could one good thing is that I have met an extraordinary number of people. I used to do, as part of my gig, I just get people to shout out from the audience, just famous singers, and it was more likely than not that I'd had a story about them.
Oh, wow.
Well, that sounds like I'm name dropping, but it's not really, because I'd just be the bloke in the corner who they hadn't noticed, you know.
No, not at all. I'm sure.
You know, there are lots of different stories, like the time I dropped a vol-au-vent into Jules Holland's piano when I was at his house.
Oh, no.
And I couldn't get it out.
Oh, no.
I wonder when they found it. You know, I've got lots of stories like that.
Did you confess to him? Or no. Did you tell him?
This is the first, I'll probably get busted. I was working with Eddie Reader in his studio, which is just next to his house, on something. And then he said, oh, come over, we're having a party, and it's full of glamorous people, and waiters handing out vol-au-vents. And I got mine on the plate, and I was shy and standing next to the piano. And in slow motion, I watched it roll off my plate into the piano. Couldn't get it out.
And that was the end of Jules' career.
Well, I don't think so.
No, I don't. Fortunately. It's like,
maybe 2 months later, he's going, what's something up with this F sharp here? You know?
Oh, that's just wonderful.
So that would be the level of my biography. It wouldn't be about, you know, how I felt when I won an Oscar. It would be more like how I felt when the vol-au-vent rolled off my plate.
That's the stories they want to hear, Boo. That's what we're all waiting for. Oh dear, sounds like you're obviously in the right place at the right time, or the wrong place at the right time. But
yeah. I think the thing is, next time you see me, just don't offer me anything.
Yeah, it's probably spherical. Yeah. Oh dear. Sounds like you have lots of these incidents.
Oh, yes.
Well, you've got to do that book then. You really do, because it's going to be crammed full of stuff, because when you start thinking about it, it'll all start rolling out, pardon the pun. It'll be there for you.
Yeah. It's the title, The Bollabont in the Piano.
Yes. Oh, so looking back at all this stuff then, what moment would you say you're the most proud of, or are you able to say that you're the most proud of something?
Oh, there's millions of them, but talking about Peter, like Duke Special, being in the studio in Dublin, he performed it live with an orchestra for the record. That was a pretty, because we'd written them on guitars and pianos, and then someone had orchestrated it, and just sitting in the room and hearing that blaring out the speakers, that was pretty good. Another really good moment, actually, it's a funny one, because Christopher had asked me to go down and produce a young band, and it was the Stripes. I don't know if you remember them.
Yes, I do.
And they were 15, and they were set up, and I walked in and said, "They're all set up. Would you like to hear them play?" And the first time they played, it blew my mind. They were so amazing. It was a great source of pain to me that I felt they were slowly squashed out of existence, but how raw they were when they were that young. It was astonishing. That's a big moment. But I could do that all day long, but that just popped into my head because that was the next one that popped in.
Hearing
when we were talking about Harvest Gypsies earlier, being on tour with Heidi Talbot, and we got a CDR of Harvest Gypsies, and we couldn't stop playing it. It was a lovely sunny day, and playing it over and over as we shot through the Northumberland. That's another one. They're all like that. They're not really when there aren't any Oscar moments
yet.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah. Well, you just never know, because I mean, you've got so many hats that you're wearing. You know, you're a singer, writer, producer, you've written for TV.
Choreographer.
Chef.
Yeah.
It's, you know, any moment it could all happen.
It could all explode.
Yes, in the most least expected way. Yeah. So what else are you up to then? You've obviously got the single Wonderlust is out today, I think, isn't it? Or it's out
tomorrow, I think it's tomorrow.
18th it is.
Yes,
so that's out on the 18th.
The other side of it is nice. That's an interesting thing. The other side is a song called Listen, which is a song is going to be on an album called Miniatures, which is it's a bit of a long story, but there was an album called Miniatures 40 years ago, and this is a new version of it. And every song on it will be a minute long. And I happen to have this song, which I tried to record two albums ago, which I always really liked, I wanted to write a song that you might hear in a Disney film in the 40s. It was just me and a guitar, and someone on Patreon, who's an arranger, a string arranger, said, "Well, I'd love to do a string arrangement for that." So he did, and that's the record. He just took my recording and put a lot of orchestral stuff on it, and it's 1 minute long, and I like it.
Listen. You might hear the sound of a tear. Listen, it seems so clear, so far yet near. It doesn't matter how we came to be. All I know is that we are. Sometimes the only way to see is to close your eyes and listen, listen, listen. And you might
hello there, this is Boo Hewding, and you are listening to Cat Tales.
Brilliant.
So obviously by early next week, I'll be ordering the big letters that go behind me like Elvis in red lights. So. Well, there's more to do for my stuff. There's a State of the Union, which is me and Brooks Williams. We've made two singles to come out for the rest of the year. Another record with him. Finish my record. Finish Adam's record. Finish Lady Nade's record. I've been working with some amazing people, a woman called Elaine Lennon, which she helped her make her charity single, which was really well received. A woman called Adriana Spinner. Found a very interesting young guy called Joshua Grant, who accidentally, with his first single, before I knew him, he made a song called Edinburgh, and it got to number one in the charts in Scotland, but he's got in the top 40 in the whole of UK, but he had no, it was a complete accident. So I've been helping him with what he does next. Lots of different things. Each day, every day, different things.
Different stuff. And of course, you do all your songwriting workshops and stuff as well, don't you?
Yeah, which is, again, it's sort of related to what I was saying before, because I've made so many friends doing that. And to me, probably the most rewarding thing you can do is there's a woman called Madeline Harwood, who I met just over a year ago. She came to a songwriting workshop in Gloucester, and she said, I asked her what her lifetime's ambitions were, and they're pretty modest. And one of them was to be played on Radio 6. So on Saturday, I helped her write a song and I helped to produce it. And on Saturday, got his first play on Radio 6. She was quite happy.
Oh, fabulous. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. I'm going to have to ask for your help, Hick. I've got all these lyrics that I've written. I say lyrics, they're poems, yeah, actually, which could in fact be lyrics. But it's like, how do you go from that to then producing a song? I mean, I can do the words, but the music seems to be eluding me, you know, or should
you play?
I play the ukulele, but not very well. I will confess.
It doesn't matter how well you play it, actually. Some fantastic songwriters aren't really musicians. I don't think they're related particularly. If you can think of a tune and you can think of and some good words, that's a song. Neil McCall, who used to be in my band, his dad was Ewan McCall, and he wrote First Time Ever I Saw Your Face, which is one of the most beautiful songs ever.
Yeah, for Peggy. And he
didn't play an instrument, so you don't need to play an instrument to write songs. But how do you do it? I don't know. You could send them me and I could tell you. A lyric, a poem can be a lyric, but a poem is a poem, and a lyric, the difference is that it's sort of designed to be sung.
Yes.
And there's sort of, that's a big part of my workshops, is working with people and trying to just, then my workshops aren't like, I don't teach people, I just sort of say, look, if you do this, this might get you there quicker. So, and they're not like some workshops where I just sort of say, today we're all going to pretend to be trees or anything like that. I really get down to the nitty gritty of why things might work or don't work, or why rhyme schemes work, or why different meters work. And it's not rocket science, but it's just so rewarding to see people take that on board and then start writing songs, because you obviously have it in you, Kat, because you're writing it down. It's just like showing you a few little guideline things. Yeah. Whereas there aren't rules, but there are certainly things that make life easier. When I have to write a song for, say, a radio program, which happens occasionally, and they'll say, could you write a song about isolation or something? I say, yeah, of course. They said, when do you want it? I say, could we have it tomorrow morning, please?
Oh, dear.
That happens. So I call on a lot of things about structure and meter and the length and the flow and all that stuff. That's really useful, because once you know that stuff, all you do is think about the emotion you're trying to impart. So that's the thrust of my workshops, is not to make people write hits up to a formula or stuff like that. It's just to show them stuff that's going to make it easier to get it from your you know, the thought to the page, sort of thing.
Wow, that's fascinating. You say it's not rocket science, but actually, to somebody who can't do that, it's, you know, it is rocket science. It's magic.
it kind of isn't, because honestly, the hardest one, right, the hardest one ever was a really nice guy called Simon, who came on my weekend courses probably 9 times, and he couldn't play anything apart from a bit of saxophone, and he couldn't play chords, he couldn't sing, and his lyrics never had any meter and didn't rhyme and stuff, but there was something there. But eventually, after 9 times, I said to him, well, what do you want to do? And he said, well, like, can I spend a day in the studio with you? And I was pretty resistant, because I didn't know what would happen. From that, he's quite driven. From that was a German idea, and it ended up being an album with lots of different singers. He doesn't sing on it. He reads poems sometimes. And it's a thing called Simon and the Astronauts, and it got played loads on the radio. And that's what my son's band, he writes the music for it now. And they're now on their third release, and they are getting really, like, big management in America interested. It totally blows my mind, because if anyone can do it if they have the drive and the vision. So he's probably the most extraordinary story of all of them. It's incredibly good music. He kind of comes up with the ideas and gets other people to help form it.
Wow.
So I believe in that power of creativity. So some songwriting workshops, they will have a criteria,
yeah,
and you'll have to send in demos and that's it. I don't do that because some of the best stories have come with people who say to me, I can't do this. And then if you've got an idea, Kat, then you can. And it just needs a bit of someone showing you some clues and coming up with concepts.
Oh, that's so inspirational. I will be, yeah, signing up to one of your workshops. I've got to do it. I've got to write that song. It's like everybody's got a book.
You should. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would love. I feel the same about books. A lot of some of my friends are authors, and I look. It seems like a mysterious thing. But you should come. I just put one up, which is it's not mine actually, but I'm doing it for someone else. It looks really beautiful next April, where it's in the wilds of Scotland somewhere. It's on Facebook.
Brilliant. I'm going to look that up. Boo.
They're always fun.
Yeah, well, it's
bound to anyone.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And that exchange of ideas and everything.
And there's one of my great friends here, Finley Napier, who I've done a lot of work with and now become a really good friend. There's a Moniac Moor, which is called Scotland's Creative Writing Centre. We were going to do a residential in December, but now that's going online. So keep an eye. I'm always doing them.
I will indeed. Oh, look, do you know what? It's been fabulous talking to you. I could talk all night, but I've gone on too long. No, you haven't. No, I'm not. I'm not at all. I'm thinking...
I can try and be more interesting.
No, you're not. You're very interesting. I'm just thinking I don't want to take up all your night because I could. I could chat for England. I'll be getting the wine out. I'll be sitting here slurping away, going, well, what will you hear, boo? Listen to this. Yes. I'll be trying my ukulele. And you'll be going, oh, God, she's useless.
send me something if you want. I can say something about it. It might be helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, I will send you. Yes, I'll send you a poem that I'm trying to put into a song. You'll go, forget it. It's never going to happen, Kat. Forget it.
Yeah, just dream on. No, yeah. I'm not like that. I try to be encouraging.
No.
Only, and it's a good thing because when I have been, it's like with that guy, Simon, it ended in something really genuinely amazing that I think, if I hadn't been like that, and if he'd met other people, they would have just told him not to bother, whereas there's something really magical about what he does. So,
yeah. Oh, well, that's great. You see, look at that legacy that you're leaving. When you leave, I'm not saying you're leaving now, obviously, for God's sake.
Have you heard something?
No. it was a phrase, you know what I mean? When you depart this earth, look at the legacy you will leave.
Well, a cheery thought. I might do an air punch.
Oh dear. No, I mean, it's lovely to actually be able to inspire others to, you know, do something they don't think they can achieve. And that is truly magical.
It is. Well, I fell into it all by accident, really. It was some people asked me years and years ago, some Danish people came up to me at a gig in Glasgow and said, would you come and do something like that? And I didn't even know that it was a thing. And I loved it so much. It's become a huge part of my life over the last nearly 20 years. And it's like, it's just wonderful. It's a pretty nice thing.
It's really special because people, when somebody decides to write a song or they put their thoughts or words into, you know, thoughts down as a lyric, then they're putting themselves into that, aren't they? So you're part and parcel of that, you know, creation. I think that's very special. I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Yes, I shall start planning my legacy now, I think. Now you've...
Now I've brought it to you.
Now you've reminded me of my mortality.
Sorry about that. I didn't intend to do that. I really didn't do it. But now it's out there.
Do that with all your victims.
Yeah, before you go, yes, just make sure that just you do this. Yeah. Yeah.
Just to remind you.
Oh, dear. I'm sure you've got plenty of years left to inspire people.
All right.
You take care. See you on that workshop.
Okay. Oh, yes. Yes, go for it.
I will. See you soon. Take care.
Later.
Bye.
You've been listening to Cattails. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattails.co.uk.